Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Casella.
Caller analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Casella.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Casella.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. An hour of football merriment here. June the 13th. Open mini camp. Plenty to talk about. Jeff Lagerman across the table wearing a bright orange Hunt Life shirt. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
I'm wearing a bright green shirt, and everyone keeps saying how loud I am, but am I wrong? Is his shirt not equally as loud? Just
I'd say his is a little louder. Would you expect it from Jeff? You expect that hunting look.
I don't know.
Blaze orange, you know.
Yeah, it's a good-looking shirt.
Yeah.
I'm wearing white.
And you know what? If we were smart, we would have worn white as well because it was blazing hot.
I'll tell you, I've covered a lot of training camps and a lot. You know, you guys have been through it. This off season has been a long one anyway, and then that practice out there was hot, and I'm a little worn out. And I've got some training camp stamina under my belt. Yeah. I'm a little worn out.
You gotta get ready for this one, big boy. Cause, you know, the thing about it was there were some high clouds out there. And they seem to drift all the way around the sun. I kept thinking, well, that's going to come around. It's going to cut it out a little bit. No.
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds of shade there.
Here and there.
At the very end, it got nice and cool, which was nice.
Very hot, and got a lot of opinions about minicamp. I mean, to me, I mean, we'll get to them, but I mean.
Can I just offer this one real quick, and then you take it everywhere else?
Right ahead.
Boy, did that punter kick the heck out of the ball.
When
they put
him
out. There was one where I didn't think it was going to come down. I just had to say that because it was on the top of my mind.
Yeah, to me, though, I mean, you go back and really think back to the very beginning of OTAs and what we saw. And what we saw was a team that had a lot to learn. And what we saw out there yesterday and what we saw out there today is just night and day. I mean, the timing between the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the tight ends, the passing game, I thought, has taken a huge step. Because, you know, we were in a little bit of the dark, so to speak, because we haven't been able to watch a lot of the practices because it's been only open for a short period of time.
That's right.
Do you remember? But one thing we have been able to see is the one-on-ones.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterbacks, wide receivers versus the defensive backs. Did you watch that one-on-one today?
Mm-hmm.
And how efficient the offense was? I mean, to me, that was just, when I saw that, I was like, you know what? That's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was one play earlier where I looked at Jeff and I think it was in team. It was after the one-on-one drills. And, you know, Blaine stepped back and threw a 3 to 5 step drop and threw it out to Justin Blackman. And obviously it's just OTAs or just minicamp. But it was crisp. It was timing. You know, good velocity on the throw. It's what you want to see this time of year.
Well, the biggest difference is...
Oh, hi, Tony. We didn't get to introduce you. How are you?
Tony's here.
I've been here the whole time.
Yeah. Well,
he's wearing light
blue.
We've
got to introduce you, though, yeah. It's a more subtle. Tony's a very subtle guy, and it's
I'm subtle, unlike someone else in the room.
I'm not the only one. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's normal. He's going hunting. I mean, we want to make sure he doesn't get shot.
All right. What's on your mind, Tony? How are you? Nice to see you.
It's good to be here. I was just going to say the biggest thing that stands out to me, because I think OTAs are very purposeful for the team and the coaches and reps. I think it's very difficult to make judgments sitting there on the sidelines watching anything. It's fun to get excited. You have to do it. It's important for players and coaches. The biggest thing that stands out for me, you know, besides the guys, you know, throwing the ball, catching, looking good, is the tempo. The tempo is
night and day.
I mean, it's not the same organization. It
well,
is.
You're talking about the overall practice tempo.
Just everything.
And to me, the point that I would make about tempo was that early in OTAs and in the middle part of OTAs, the defense really dictated tempo of practice.
Right.
In the last 2 days, the offense dictated tempo as well, which is what you want to see.
And that's not surprising because if you remember when Mel took over after Jack was fired last year, that was the storyline, was that the offense was catching up tempo-wise to the defense and the defense was setting the tone. It's only that carried into OTAs and mini camps, but it looked like a, you know, team effort today.
Looks like a football. Looks like a professional football.
It looks like I was thinking the exact thing before you said it. It looks like a professional team with focus.
And you know the disappointing thing is, frankly, is that we get excited about there being good tempo.
There's something to be said for that.
No, but it's disappointing.
We haven't seen it though.
But it is the story of this
hence
offseason.
Hence 5-11. Yeah. Hence no playoffs. Hence not no division titles. I mean, that's the sad thing. I mean, I'm happy here. We don't want to look back, and we're not doing that. It's exciting, but it's almost disappointing that it's exciting because that should be the norm. I mean, Jeff, I mean, when we were here, that you didn't go to practice unless you were planning on going good tempo. I mean, things were done crisply. Even when we were brother-in-law, it was done crisply because there was a guy.
We had a good tempo.
Yeah, there was good
with
tempo.
With the brother-in-law stuff.
We made sure that neither of us were going to get hurt or, you know, the drill was going to be done properly.
Being but in the media back then, we never got excited when you guys played with good tempo.
Because it was normal.
Right.
But Tony, one thing that we haven't been able to, I mean, we never sat back when we played and got to see the big picture.
I agree.
You know, so now we get to do what John and Brian have done for years.
Lucky you.
And watch.
Which is also very disappointing.
And to see that.
Speaking of disappointing.
Speaking of like life going on a wrong turn somewhere.
But we get a chance now to see that and to evaluate that. You know, and to me, you know, I'm not blowing smoke up rear end. I mean, I'm excited about what I'm seeing.
Well, and
I'm liking what I'm seeing.
And I think to point out, so many people were so critical of where Gabbert finished last season, and maybe a lot of that was justified. You guys would have to decide that. But to see where he is today is a reason for excitement because we're all putting so much on his development.
Well, and it is. It's all on him. The only caveat I'll say is he looks great. And I got to spend 2 days with him on the caravan. And I liked him last year, but he is a mature kid.
Yeah.
And he just, there's something a little bit different about him. I mean, last year seasoned him where he is, there's a maturity and a leadership sense about
right.
him.
And what I'm saying
also
is the tempo.
He looks around him and feels confident in what's going on around
but
him.
But the big test will be, you still got to.
Agree.
Because he's had, even last year we saw the kid with more talent
sure.
than we've seen.
What I'm saying is the tempo goes through the quarterback, and
the tempo
is really good. And so it's the reason there's optimism and excitement is because he looks good.
He does look great. And I'm for one, believe it's going to carry over once the pads and preseason and regular season. I believe in Blaine. I think
he's had two real nice days.
I just think he's the guy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback this year, but I think he's a franchise quarterback. I think the pocket presence, I think everything will be cleaned up because of the footwork and how much that's improved, the confidence. But he's still got – until you do it, there's going to be questions
Agreed.
Out there. And that was the – and maybe we can talk about it later.
I'm just supplementing.
The big Ron Jaworski did the big article on right. Blaine Gabbert, and that was his whole point. He did a thing evaluating every quarterback and ranking him. He ranked Blaine 29th and said the biggest issue after watching tape is pocket presence. Can he sit in the pocket and throw the ball when he knows he's going to get hit? And that was the negative, and he said the kid has huge arm, huge upside, yada, yada, yada. And I think that's everyone's question.
True enough.
But it's exciting. We're excited about tempo.
Because it's related to him. All right, we need a break. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Joseph.
Now the Jaguars are going to host their second annual movie night at Everbank Field with a showing of Friday Night Lights, Friday, June 22nd. This is also a chance to select a seat for the 2012 season. Gate's going to open at 6 p.m. You can check out available seats until the movie starts at 8. And in addition to the movie and select a seat, there's going to be interactive games, the Roar, alumni players, D-Line, and, of course, Jackson DeVille. The event and parking are free and open to the public. For more information, just call the Jaguars, 904-633-2000. More Jaguars this week, right after this. Welcome back to Jaguars Radio. This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Talk to the guys, 355-NFL-1, 1-800-355-NFL-1. If you're out of town, this portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Football Fanatics.
Talked to him a little bit yesterday at practice, and you know, just tell him you got to grow up, you know. So, you know, you got to stay low key, low profile, and you know, just, you know, everybody makes mistakes, and you know, he's got to learn from it and just keep doing better. He's playing with a little chip on his shoulder, you know, a little mad, you know, just about the whole situation. But he's going to be a pro, and you know, we're going to help him out along the way, and he'll be fine.
LaRon Robinson on his new teammate Justin Blackmon, the veteran wide receiver, has been around the league, sharing his insights and what he said to Justin Blackmon as the minicamp got to be underway. And we got James in West Liberty, Kentucky, with a thought on the Jaguars' first-round draft choice. James, welcome to the program.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
This one's more for Loggy. If I'm not mistaken, Loggy, I think a few weeks ago you said you'd watch tape on Blackman, and you're just going to give us some of your insights on it. I was curious about it. I know reading up on different prospects coming up to the draft, there's a lot of opinions on Blackman not being considered a top 10. So I was a little nervous about that, but I'm not going to pretend to be a scout by any means. So I'm just curious about what you saw about Blackman on tape. And that's it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Watching Justin, I watched every play in which he was targeted his senior year in college, and the guy is fantastic. He has everything that you'd want a wide receiver to have. The only thing that he doesn't have is that 4.2, 4.25 speed where he's just going to run by everybody. But body control, range, the ability to separate, and then once he catches the ball, he is extremely, extremely productive.
Jeff, don't you think that, listen, 4.2 is 4.2, but that idea of being 4.2, 4.3 and just running by people is a little bit overrated?
It is because you know,
guys,
Smith,
were, I mean, guys go, were 4.5, or let's say Blackman's a high 4.4 guy. At high 4.4, you can still
run by
people.
And, you know,
Keaton McCardell was 4.7, and somehow he got behind people.
Yeah, but he didn't run, you know, down the field on the go
route. You know what I mean.
But Jimmy Smith on
the
clock.
How many routes are there like that anyway?
There's very, very few because, I mean, either the defensive backs can keep up with a guy
unless
he's just absolutely sick. But Jimmy Smith, perfect example.
5.44, buddy.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he might have been
4.5,
but he just had a knack of being able to set it up to where he could run by guys.
He was so explosive.
So he had functional speed.
Lower body, I think he was like probably high 4.4s.
Yeah,
low 4.5s with t-shirt shorts on.
Probably.
And I think he was 4.3 with pads on. He played faster.
Oh yeah,
I mean, he's one of those guys, and I think Blackman's one of those guys too because he's so big and strong.
I don't think
not
he,
as fast as Jimmy.
Yeah, he
but,
didn't.
No.
He didn't play faster like Jimmy, but he could set something up to where he could get behind a guy.
My point
and
is,
still
he's not a 4.3 guy who plays at 4.5.
Do you remember the Texas A&M game?
Yes,
that he played this year.
I didn't pay attention to who the opponent was. I just watched him.
I watched it live.
He owned it. He owned the middle of the field. I mean, he would take the ball and make a move back to the inside, and he was so good in space. And when he got to traffic, he just went right through it. I mean, he is a dramatic playmaker. How about the Stanford game, the bowl game? I mean, everything he wanted to do, he could do.
Yeah. What always amazed me, what impressed me the most watching him his senior year, was what he did once he got the ball and how he made people miss.
Right.
I mean, and that was just, you know, time after time after time, and that very rarely did he catch the ball, and then that was it. It was always catch the ball, and then there was something electrifying.
And that may take some time in the NFL to truly reach
that
an elite level doing that, because that is something you have to adapt to your competition. I remember watching Reggie Wayne in Indy. His first two or three years, he didn't have that blazing speed, and he had a little trouble getting open at times. And he learned how to do what you're talking about Justin's going to have to do, which is set a guy up, beat a guy. Deeper into his career, you guys saw him here, could get deep based on what he could do off other plays.
John,
and that may be where Justin gets deep.
You've watched the NFL league-wide longer than probably all of us because of what you do. Besides Randy Moss, he's the only one that really comes to mind. Who's the last receiver that dominated as a rookie?
Very rare.
I mean, I can't think of one that was just...
The guy who comes to mind who Justin draws a comparison with is... he didn't dominate, but had a big year as a rookie, was Bolden in Arizona.
Yeah, he did have a big year.
A big year. But the point is, we're talking over a 14-year period. We're naming off a couple of guys.
I mean, I can't remember.
A.J. Green was very good last year.
A.J. Green, I mean, last year he was a Pro Bowler. My goodness.
Had 1,000 yards. He was only a little over 1,000 yards. You wouldn't call him dominant.
But he was a true number one. When teams lined up, he was a number
and
one.
And changed game plans.
But it's
rare.
My point is there's not very many guys that become out of college and are a number one receiver.
And that's the thing people have to remember with Justin is the way he plays.
Andre Johnson was.
It may take time.
Yes and no. It's not a fair. It's tough for Andre because they were so bad. I don't. I mean, he was good.
David Carr wasn't as far along.
That's my point. But, he was good, but I don't
but from the moment he was on the field,
he was the one. Yeah, he was the one.
Yeah, he did not have a 1,000-yard season. I mean, he was not.
And even Randy Johnson.
Larry Fitzgerald didn't have a 1,000-yard season.
Right.
It's Randy Johnson wasn't even the one. But he had Chris Carter on the other side, but he was dominant. I mean, he was 1,200 yards as a rookie.
I mean, well, he also had Jake Reed in the slot, too. So, I mean, he had – and that year, Robert –
They were 15 and 1.
And that year, Robert Smith led the league in rushing.
They were pretty good.
They were unbelievable. I remember 50-10 like it was yesterday.
I tried to forget it until you just mentioned it.
Sorry about that. 355 NFL 1.
So are we going to go to the elephant in the room yet? Maurice.
Oh.
No, let's do that. Let's do that after the.
You know what? camp bound. I just forgot all about it.
Let's spend the whole segment, next segment.
The second
Maurice.
One? Okay.
So I have some opinions.
All right, so Ed, who's in Mandarin? Hold on through
Imagine
the news.
That.
But we've got about.
I've never been.
We got about 3 minutes. Let's grab Kevin in Mandarin about defensive line depth. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, gentlemen, thank you for taking my call very much.
Happy to do it,
John. We discussed this briefly in the other zone this morning. I asked you about this, but I just wanted to kind of get everyone's thoughts on this. Obviously, Mincy. And, you know, Lane are being talked about as starters at the ends, and we got LOL and Knight in the middle. I've heard Gene go out of his way to praise George Selby, once or twice already this offseason. And, you know, John Chick's coming back from the injury as the wild card. And then you got guys like Aaron Morgan, and I'm hearing Andre Branch is playing with the ones a lot in practice. I'm really, really liking this depth and this rotation that we have, you know, as far as ends go and the pass rush. And I really like C.J. Mosley and De'Anthony Smith as well. I just kind of wanted to maybe throw that out there and let that let you guys make some comments off of that and see what your thoughts were.
Kevin, I mean, it's a group that's certainly fun to watch because they've got a spirited coach in Joe Cullen and Paul Spicer, and it's a fun group to watch because nobody works harder on a practice field than that position group. But you know, I like watching certain guys, the athleticism of Ryan Davis, the quickness of Branch, C.J. Mosley. I think last year proved that he belongs. You know, Jarris Pendleton is going to be exciting to watch. But you know, all of these guys that we're talking about here, I think it's almost best to say, let's just wait until they get the pads on to really look at them, because it's very difficult to tell with offensive and defensive linemen unless you're just talking about athleticism, to see how that athleticism is going to translate to once the pads get on.
Yeah, they like that group enough that they were more comfortable making the move with Campman than they would have been. And certainly Selby is a guy that they have mentioned that they've liked what they've seen from OTAs. I'm with Jeff. I'm not sure how you judge pass rushing defensive ends until the pass.
Well, because you know, Kevin, in OTAs, minicamp, and the lack of contact, obviously, you know, a couple teams, Seattle, and who's the other team that lost an OTA day because of physicalness? Carolina.
Yep.
You know, so you don't see anything one-on-one. You don't see anything that's even closely resembles
right.
What we're going to see when it comes to game day. So that's very difficult to evaluate. Now, if you wanted to talk about, like I said, just pure athleticism and how guys move, yeah, you can talk about that. But sometimes that doesn't always tell you the whole story.
But improved depth there is definitely a reason for the Cannon. Good. Tony, I'm sorry.
No, you're
Tony,
fine. That's fine.
Which you can't do in here. So go ahead, Tony.
Two quick things. One, I don't want to say it's a complete waste of time, but I don't think you can judge at all the offensive defensive line in these things at all, even less than when we play, because at least you do one-on-ones. But the flip side of that is there are going to be good players cut at that position this year, which is a good thing. It's good for your football team when good players get cut.
And Joe, with that, we send it to you and soon news over at WOKV.
Thank you very much. This is Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Friday, June 22nd. It's going to be a busy day here around Everbank. Told you movie night is on the 22nd, it's also the annual Got Skills Rookie Day, 9 a.m. at Florida Blue Practice Fields right here at Everbank Field. All kids aged 6 through 14 can attend. Space is limited, however, to the first 200 kids who register. It's a great time to have some fun, get some exercise in, and meet the Jaguars rookies. For more information and to register, just visit jaguars.com.
All right, rolling right along here. Sexton, Vaselli, Lagerman, Osher, Fortunato, everyone in the house this evening. And, well, one guy's not in the house, and that's Maurice. And it's been the big story here
in
town.
Someone's house.
Yeah, well, he's someone's doghouse, too, around here, I'm sure. But he is, as you know, skipped the mandatory minicamp. And not a word from him yet. And the word from Gene and from Mike Mularkey is that they're working with what they got. They're not going to renegotiate. So I don't know where you want to go with this, because I'm sure you're tired of talking about it like I am, off the air. Ruined Publix and everywhere you go wants to talk about it.
Well, I mean, it's a hot topic, and I mean, I get both sides. You know, I really do. You know, I understand Maurice's viewpoint that he probably feels like he should be paid as one of the best running backs in the National Football League because his production has been one of the best in the National Football League. But I also understand the Jaguars' point of view and that, hey, you know, he's got two years left on his deal. His age is not necessarily something that makes you go, you know what, he's going to be good for another 4 or 5 years. You know, so I mean, I get both sides, and I'm looking forward to hearing Maurice, you know, because we have not heard from Maurice through any of this. But obviously we have, and that his absence has spoken very loudly.
Here seems to be the issue. I mean, could you do something fair based on what he did last year without going to Peterson-Johnson extremes? And if you don't go there, is he going to be unhappy?
You could, but if you start renegotiating with guys who have 2 years left on their deal, where do you stop? And most teams that are prudent with the cap and are managing it correctly, you just don't tear up deals with 2 years remaining, especially a running back who will be in year 9 when the deals run out. When the deal runs out, he's in no man's land. Unfortunately, for Maurice Jones-Drew, contract wise, he's in no man's land.
Yeah, but listen, I'm with Jeff. I understand both sides.
Sure,
the Jaguars can't pay him. It's not prudent. And as an ex-player, I hate saying this because I understand Maurice. You're trying to get as much money as you can,
and he should.
And he should. He should be here. I disagree with him not being here.
There are ways to make your point without skipping
exactly
this.
Right.
His point was already made. They already knew that he wanted a new deal. I'm not sure what he's saying with this.
And he's still paid top 10 at his position after all these years. The Jaguars ripped up his deal when they did not have to, paid him a lot of money. And frankly, if he was in the last year of his deal, I wouldn't give him Adrian Peterson or Chris Johnson money. Those teams made a mistake and paid their running back like a franchise quarterback in a league where you can't do that anymore. If you want to manage your cap, you can't make that decision.
And that, too, is unfortunate for me. But he's in a no-man's land time in his contract and position-wise.
So it's take it or leave it. In other words, there's no middle ground here. There's no way to meet in the middle and find a way.
I didn't get the sense from Gene Smith yesterday that there was any call. That's like saying
it's unfortunate that the best linebacker can't be paid like a quarterback or the best lineman.
I think
that you don't do that. Right. You don't pay running backs that much money.
Hey, look, Maurice is a fantastic player.
He's awesome.
Fantastic player. But I think the way you could have reached middle ground is if you had come, to the first, veteran OTA and worked through the process without it becoming a public issue. In other words, he's here and nobody knows he's unhappy with the contract and discussions may be going on privately. And I think that would have been the better route for me.
Jeff, and I agree with you 100%, and I love Maurice and I'd want him on my team. He is the best player on this team. He's a great running back. He's been outstanding and he plays hard. I love the way he plays. It wouldn't have mattered if you'd have come no matter what. Gene Smith and this team was not going to give Maurice Jones-Drew more money this year no matter what. I don't see under any scenario they were going to renegotiate his contract and pay him more money. For all the reasons he's talked about, because he plays running back, because he has 2 years left on his contract, because they tore up the first one, because he has two. I mean, all the different things we said.
Yeah, everything.
It's just not going to happen. Maurice is a great player. Make as much money as you can. I understand that. But from the club's perspective, you can't do it.
There was not a lot of, first of all, Gene Smith is not a guy who says things to the media to posture. And there wasn't a whole lot of wiggle in Gene's voice when he was saying this yesterday. And it wasn't angry when he was talking about it. He was just basically saying, this is what we're doing. This is it. I mean, this is, they say in Seinfeld, this is the meal.
I just don't see any teams. I don't see any teams ever again playing running backs like franchise quarterbacks.
Well, let me ask you this, John. Could something have been done if very beginning the veteran OTA happens? He's here for that. He's here for the OTAs. He's here for the mini camps. I mean, could something quietly have been done to where you add a year? And that,
I don't think you add a year. In theory, something could have been done if Shad Khan had been on board of, you know, paying more for the next 2 years. I think you get into a real danger area when you add years, when adding it's going to take the guy into his 10th year as a running back.
But I'm just saying,
ninth year, I'm sorry.
If that approach had been taken, instead of...
I think there would be a better chance.
That's my point.
I don't think it would happen.
You think there's any chance? I don't get the sense there was any chance, Jeff. That's my sense of it.
And see, I always think that there's always a chance if things are, what's the proper word?
Approached, handled,
yeah.
Managed.
Yeah, yeah. You know.
Here's the only reason that I bring it up. We are talking about the league's leading rusher and a guy who last year was the only thing, really, that kept this team in contention to win five games.
But in this league, you can't pay based on the pass.
And look, in 343 carries last year probably diminished his value this year to some degree. I mean, I get all of that, but we're talking about the one guy, the 32 jersey that you see out there and the smile and the personality.
And he's great.
I know what you're saying. All I'm saying is could you have met in the middle with him at some point to plus it up a little bit? Not Adrian Peterson money. And, you know, here's the other side of this coin is if you say to him, look, you're making five, you know, we'll work on a deal that gets you to seven, would that have done it for him? Or does it have to be 10? Does it have to be 11?
He averages seven right now with his
signing
bonus money, guaranteed money he got.
If he's collected 20.
You could make a case that when he got that deal,
he didn't deserve it at that time.
That was kind of a leap of faith.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, he had not been a feature back. You're right.
Never been a feature back. And listen. Right.
And Gene took a gamble on him.
Well, yeah, I know he wasn't a feature back, but still, he was fabulous.
He's a great player, Jeff.
I'm just saying, I'm going back to that point in time. Okay.
Everyone knew that he was capable.
And this is where I agree with John where he said it's unfortunate. If Maurice Jones played 10 years ago.
Sure.
He would be possibly an MVP candidate. He's that type of player. He plays in a league now where the rules of football tie the hands of the defense behind their back and make it a passing league. The teams that win Super Bowl. Tell me the last Super Bowl team that had a featured back. Tell me the last time a Super Bowl team...
Here's the only thing you need to know. Last year, the Giants won the Super Bowl, and they had the 32nd best, most effective running
back. Not only that, but tell me the last time the leading rusher...
Ravens.
Terrell Davis...
1996.
No, Ravens, Jamal Lewis. They
did he have 2,000 yards the year that
no,
they won it?
No, but he was still an elite back.
He wasn't. You're right. He wasn't an elite back.
They didn't win it with him. They won it because they had the best defense ever.
With him.
Yeah. As the only offense, really. But your point is well taken. It's been
Except for when Tony Banks throws five touchdowns against us.
He had a good day.
It's been 12 years since you
so
could
did
say
Jimmy,
that. Yeah. You could say that 12 years ago. All right, we need a break. Joe, take it.
Season Ticket Owners Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. For more information on joining the Refer a Fan program, call the Jaguars Ticket Office 904-633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna returns right here on Jaguars Radio.
About 8 minutes left in our program here. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Buscelli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, and whoever else wanders into the room over the last part of this show. I think we're done with Maurice. There's really nothing much more to be said.
No, now it's, you know.
He'll be back for training camp.
Well, I think maybe.
I think he will be.
I don't think he'll be back for the beginning.
Guess what?
I kind of get the idea that he's going to push this.
Guess what? He's going to make less money than he's scheduled to make.
Right.
So maybe, you know, he's going to keep just moving down of how much money he makes.
Now the thing that I would say is this, is that if it goes into training camp, will it be a problem?
for the team? Or for
it's a team game. I mean, that's the end result. I mean, could this be a problem?
Let me ask you this way. I'd love to hear everyone's comments. Maurice Jones, how many games does it cost his team? With the style that they're going to play?
Well, the style's changing.
That's what I mean. I mean, is there any...
It puts an awful lot on Rashad Jennings, obviously. I think if Rashad can stay healthy, I think you can withstand it.
Next year will hurt worse than the year after, obviously.
Right.
One year for Blaine and the offense to really make that shift. This year would hurt more than next year, but it would hurt to a degree.
It would hurt. I mean, I don't know. I hate to try to put a number on it. Yeah, but there's no doubt it would hurt.
Sure. But on third and short, you know, where you knew he was getting the ball, they knew he was getting the ball. Yeah, although goal line wasn't as productive for him last year.
No, he kind of fell off a little bit last year, whereas the year before,
he was unstoppable.
He was magical.
The thing you know with Maurice is you know from history he's going to be there every week.
Oh, he's a great
and
player.
Getting production, even if it's not 180 yards, he's going to be reliable. You know you're going to get that 85 yards that matter. The reliability is what you would miss.
Oh, huge. But it is interesting. It's interesting that the leading rusher, I think the best back in the NFL last year, it just shows you how the league has changed. If you said you were going to be without your starting quarterback, you'd be like, oh, gosh, it's over. We're, you know, the season's be a loss.
Well, you knew the Texans weren't going to go very far in the playoffs without Mitch Schaub.
That's my point. I mean, it just shows you the running back position because the way the game changed, I mean, how you value that completely changes. Because we're talking about the best running back in football, leading rusher, and we're saying it would hurt, but no one said it would be devastating. It would be
because so much still depends on what's going to happen with Blaine.
Because it's all about Blaine.
Yeah, when you lose a quarterback, that's devastating. When you lose a running back, it hurts.
It hurts.
Right.
It would hurt. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it hurt. Maurice is outstanding. The league has changed, I mean, just since we played it.
The only time it wouldn't be devastating, you know, to lose a quarterback, if you were the 49ers when you had Joe Montana.
And Steve Young.
And Steve Young. Young. Yeah, it didn't hurt that bad, did it?
Well, it didn't hurt so bad when Phil Simms and Jeff Hostetler worked also.
No.
So.
That's a good point.
That was a different game. Yeah,
different era.
You know, that's when you're pounding.
Power running football.
Yeah, great defense.
Defense, yep.
With all that said, I'll miss it if he's not here because he's great for this team and we need him to contend and fight for the playoffs. You need Maurice Jones here.
What does it do for the Team Teal effort, for the ticket sales, because he's been the man?
I don't think it really affects it that much because I think the fans still figure he's going to be here come training camp, come regular season.
That or they understand the transition that's taking place.
I just think I think if you ask the 10 fans, a super majority, 7 of them are going to say, oh, well, he's going to be here. I just think that's kind of the mentality.
I don't
think it hurts.
Can he hold out until, what is it, week 10 and still get paid for the season?
That's an accrual. You have to be here by week 10.
Credit of a year,
but he doesn't get paid his whole salary.
He doesn't get paid for the weeks he misses.
You still have
pension.
Another year.
Right.
You know, and you still have all your fines, and
it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Will he get fined for missing minicamp? Will he get fined if he doesn't show up?
Doesn't the team have to fine him for missing minicamp? I mean, if you're the team, because again, we talk about precedent.
I'd be very surprised they don't fine him. I don't think they're very happy. I mean, obviously they're not happy with it. So, I don't think there's much gray area there. They're not going to say it publicly, but I would be surprised if they don't fine him.
All right. So, how good is Rashad Jennings? If they had to play with him for some period of time.
Well, that's a great unknown. I mean,
we saw the long run, the 74-yard touchdown 2 years ago.
This is not like, you know, when Fred Taylor and then you had Maurice Jones-Drew and you saw Maurice and you were like, man, he's got some serious flash. But we even had doubts. Could he be the feature guy?
Yep.
You know, we haven't seen Rashad have those flash moments
even in the
role of a backup. Yeah. So,
well, especially with a running back, there's always a doubt until you see him do it.
Sure.
Because it's such a pounding. Consistency is so key. I mean, that's what Maurice gave you.
But Rashad has looked very good in no pads in the offseason.
And a lot of people say if you're a good running team with a good offensive line that you can put, you might not get the 1,600-yard season like Maurice Jones-Drew gives you, but you can still be very productive. I mean, this league is littered with mid to late to restricted free agent, rookie free agents that come in and are very productive because they're good running teams. The perfect example is Houston Texans. I mean, they have two guys that one's undrafted, one I think a second rounder. Very good, both very productive.
Well, they're not very good. Run blocking offensive line. Who plays running back should be fairly good. Minimal.
No, no, no. I said that one running back.
Arian Foster?
Is beyond.
Oh, yeah.
Very
no, I'm
good.
Just saying, but my point is.
He's unreal.
They are a very good running team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you could. I'm not saying they're Arian Foster, but Ben Tate. You put Ben Tate in there, he's not Arian Foster, but early in the year when Arian was hurt, they were still rushing for 150 a game.
Yeah.
Because they have a great scheme. That's what they do.
There's a lot of guys who can run the ball. What you usually miss when you're out your starting running back is that guy.
Explosive plays.
Explosive, who knows all the blocking schemes, who can go out and receive. There's guys on the street who can run. There's not always guys on the street who can play the position.
Right, I agree.
Well, and you know better than all of us. When Edgerrin James was the league's leading rusher, what, three of his first 4 years?
His first two.
Okay, the Colts were very good, but they weren't champions until they were playing with Joe Addai. And what did he have, 800 yards?
In that offense, it was clearly the key there was
Patriots.
Being able to block.
Well, look at the Patriots.
Right. I mean, more and more today, you want a couple of guys who can do a lot of different things. But Maurice Jones is a different thing because this offense is built different.
Right, real quick, you talk about, look at the four teams in the championship games last year.
Interchangeable running.
You except for Baltimore, who had Ray Rice.
Right.
How about this thought? He's a good receiver out of the backfield, Jennings, right? How does he fit in? I mean, one of the things Foster does so well is he's an excellent receiver as well.
He's the best.
In a passing offense, does Jennings
him and
have
Ray
more
Rice,
value?
Him and Ray Rice. Arian Foster, Ray Rice, two best receiver backs in the league.
Okay.
What about LeSean McCoy?
Yeah. Didn't even think about him.
He's pretty good, too.
Sorry.
Him, too.
So there's running backs.
I'm thinking AFC just because AFC so much.
Just wondering about his relative value in an offense that's shifting to more of a passing offense.
Well, I mean, Rashad is a very talented receiver. I mean, he catches the ball very clean. He's probably more of a natural receiver than Maurice. You know, but he's not the runner.
No.
You know,
not very many guys are.
No, very few are. So I don't know, you know. And the one thing that we don't know is, what is the offense going to be? I mean, what kind of premium are they going to put on that position? You know, so there's a lot of unknowns.
All right, that'll do it, guys. Have a great night, everybody. Talk to you next week here on Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
You will.